You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Enchanted Islands, Alison Amon's latest novel, it's her third, tells the story of a woman who comes into her own romantically and professionally when she's sent to the Galapagos Islands to work as a spy during the years leading up to World War II. It's published by the Nantalese imprint of Doubleday, and I'm very pleased it has brought Alison Amon to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The main character in this book is based in part on a real woman, Frances Conway?
That's correct. Yeah, Frances Conway really did live in the Galapagos Islands in the years before the World War II and then the years following World War II. And she wrote two memoirs about her experience there. And I was doing some research on the Galapagos Islands because I thought it might be fun to set a book there, and came across her memoirs and read them and just fell in love with her and fell in love with her voice. She's funny. She's self-deprecating. She's witty. You know, she really sort of makes fun of her experience there, and I thought it was really interesting.
And this allowed you to fill in the blanks?
Yeah, you know, I think the memoirs are really notable, too, for what they didn't say. You know, memoirs usually are sort of, you know, exposés about people's inner thoughts and emotions, and that was completely absent from her books. There's nothing about her relationship with her husband. There's nothing about why they chose to go to the Galapagos Islands, what brought them there, what motivated them to stay there, what motivated them to return to this sort of deserted island. And that got me really thinking, you know, why is she omitting these details? What is she not saying?
You tell it in first person. Is it based on her voice in the memoir?
It is based on her voice in the memoir, because that was what attracted me to her story in the first place, was her voice. And for a while, I thought a lot about maybe bringing in parts of her memoir to sort of weave it with my novel. And then I thought, no, that's an exercise in mimicry rather than an exercise in fiction. And to really make her my own, I had to sort of be inspired by her voice and then use a voice for her that
you,
I invented.
You teach creative writing.
I do,
at Lehman College.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow your own advice when you're writing fiction?
Sometimes I do, yes, sometimes I do. Sometimes my advice is tailored in a class for emerging writers, but one of the things I like best about teaching is that students will ask you questions, and in responding to those questions, I discover things I didn't know I knew. And oftentimes a student will ask me about their story, and I'll be talking to them and be like, wait, actually, I need to do that in my own work. Can you hold on? I'm going to write that down. And so that's one of the delights of teaching.
So do we know if she was a spy?
Most likely she was not, but she might have been. Her husband was in the armed forces and did help build a naval base on Baltra, one of the Galapagos Islands in the Second World War. And it seems pretty clear that he was the anonymous author of a feasibility study to see if they could turn the island on which they were living, Floriana, into an Air Force base. So he definitely did that sort of covert work for the government. As far as whether or not they were spying on the Germans or what so many Germans were doing living on that island in the years leading up to World War II, that's a matter of speculation, but a fun speculation.
But you also have their marriage as being something of I don't want to say a marriage of convenience, but something set up by the military so that they can go and spy.
Yes, yes. And that was completely my invention. I wanted to, there's no indication of that, except that they do seem sort of very mismatched as a pair. He's a, you know, very handsome, tall, much younger. He's 11 years younger than she is. And so it was that sort of incongruity that got me speculating about what brought them together.
You said that you were interested in the Galapagos Islands because you'd gone there as a teenager?
I'd gone there with my parents as a teenager, and everyone who goes there really comes back raving about it. It's an amazing experience. And I learned, this is now my third novel, my fourth book, that you spend a lot of time in the place that you set a novel in. And my first novel was set in the 1800s in Oklahoma. And while I very much enjoy my twice-yearly visits to Oklahoma, I thought it'd be fun to set a novel someplace that I wanted to spend more time in. So I wanted to return to the Galapagos, so I set this novel there.
And it was important to research it, because not every novelist actually even goes to the place that they're writing about. Saul Bellow wrote Anderson the Rain King about Africa, and he was very proud of the fact he'd never been to Africa.
Yeah, and I definitely wrote the first draft of the book without going back to the Galapagos. I think, though, I did go back and do some research, and that research mostly consisted of just spending time there and feeling, smelling the smells, feeling the heat, feeling the experiencing the loneliness of being on an island.
Aren't they mostly barren of human activity?
There are only four populated islands. The other ones are protected by the government as nature areas. But and when I first went to the Galapagos, there was no land-based tourism. And now in the intervening 20-something years, there are hotels on the islands, and the population has really grown, which is straining the natural resources.
How many Europeans and Americans lived in the Galapagos during the time you cover in this book?
It varied because people would come and spend a few months or you know, and then leave. Probably between 20 and 50 in the entire archipelago.
And why Floriana? Wasn't it a harsher place than the other habitable islands?
It was actually, it had fresh water, which is the biggest key, obviously. And it had a very large population of wild goats, donkeys, boars, and cows. And so it made it a decent place to earn a living. And then it was also, the higher elevations are very wet, so it made it a pretty good place to grow food.
And it was also a place that attracted Germans. Is that what got you thinking about the whole spy aspect of
there
this
is
novel?
Floriana itself has, and I encourage any listeners to do a little research on it, has a really interesting history. In the 1920s, there was a series of disappearances and murders, and it's the basis of a documentary that came out last year called The Galapagos Affair. And it's a really crazy, interesting story, and it was the source of a lot of fascination in the American public in the 1920s.
There was a charismatic doctor who was also a vegetarian, and he attracted people.
He did, yes. He was a...
almost like a cult leader.
Yes, exactly. He was sort of, he had this philosophy of self-reliance and vegetarianism, and he ironically died of meat poisoning, which is, you know, just desserts for... It turns out he was not a very... he did not like humanity as a whole, I'd say.
And so, he and his wife had their teeth pulled out before they arrived.
Exactly. She was his patient in Germany, and... they decided to run away together. They had their teeth pulled. They arranged for their spouses to marry each other. And they got together and went to Floriana. And they lived there until he died. And then she went back to Germany.
My guest is Alison Amond. Her latest novel is Enchanted Islands. It's her third novel. It's also an award-winning collection of short stories. Do we have any reason to believe that the Germans who were living there were engaged in activities to help Nazi Germany?
It's not out of the question. The Galapagos have a really important strategic location, and they were pretty decisive in the War of 1812. There was a very famous naval battle that was fought there. If you were going to, say, muster forces to attack the Panama Canal, which you know, would have crippled American supply lines during the Second World War, the Galapagos is a fantastic place to muster those ships. There's fresh water, there's food, it's out of the way, you can hide ships there. And so there was some concern that the Axis was planning an attack from there. So it's not completely out of the question, and certainly America thought it was important enough to have an Air Force base there.
So in your novel, her husband goes as a spy, but she also engages in spying. Mm-hmm. And she achieves a feeling of strong personal identity as a spy.
Yeah, I think she surprises herself. I think she marries her husband Ainsley and goes to the Galapagos almost on an adventure, and then is surprised and happy to discover how important her role is. And I think and that's the way she's validated in that experience, that she has not been as an unmarried woman, you know, being born in 1890. And so that importance and that fulfillment, I think, is really important to her.
You begin and end the book in an old age home where Frances and her lifelong friend Rosalie are living out their silver years.
Mm-hmm.
How important is female friendship to the plot of this book?
I mean, I think female friendship
is
the main
theme. Is that what it's
really
about?
Yeah, you know, I was really excited about writing a spy novel, and it turns out there's a lot of meditation on female friendship. But it's a topic that's very important to me. You know, as a woman, my female friendships are, you know, both complicated and very fulfilling to me.
In the course of their friendship, there are powerful betrayals, mixed motives, clashes religion-wise and in other ways. But the relationship survives, in fact, in ways that are much more intact than a marriage.
Yeah, certainly for my main character, Frances, this friendship with Rosalie is the enduring relationship of her life. You know, her family is not, she's not close to her family. Her husband comes to her late in life and then passes away. And Rosalie is really the one person who is there for her. And I find that that's the case in a lot of friendships.
Well, do you think that it's partly because we enter a marriage with certain kinds of expectations, perhaps expectations that are hard to achieve, whereas with a friendship, it's just something that we fall into, and it just continues and might have bad moments, but it's our friend. So
yeah,
even if you don't talk for a couple of months, you know, I miss so-and-so. Let me give him or her a call.
Yeah, I think there's something very unconditional about a friendship that perhaps is, you know, obviously up until contemporary times, a marriage was a contract between two people. And, you know, I've never been married, but I do have to say that, you know, my friendships last for the ages as spouses come and go. Yeah.
Rosalie is honored for her work during the war. What did she do?
So supposedly she's being honored for her raising money for the State of Israel and hosting parties. But it is certainly Frances's opinion that Frances herself did a lot more.
And Frances is offended that Rosalie's getting all the glory.
Yes, yes. And certainly that kind of envy is a hallmark of relationships as well.
Where did they meet?
So in my fictionalization of their lives, they met as children in Duluth, and Rosalie is from a German Jewish family, so they are educated and sort of quote unquote refined, whereas Frances is from a Polish family, a large uneducated family, and Frances is forced to quit school after middle school. She's not allowed to go to high school. She's sent to secretarial school so she can help support the family, and that's a big disappointment for her.
And Frances's maiden name, was it really Frankowski?
Nope, I made all that up. Yeah, it was. There is very little to be found about Frances Conway, the person, other than what's in her memoirs. And she says very little. She says that she's from Nebraska. She went to University of Nebraska. Other than that, we know almost nothing about her. And because her name is fairly common, it was very difficult for me to find out anything about her. I know she's buried in Los Gatos, California, and I know what day she was born, but that's about it.
So she just allowed you to talk about all the things that you were interested in while you were writing this novel.
Yeah.
Like getting to know someone's secrets.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, secrets, I think, are a really interesting phenomenon. The secrets we keep from each other and also from ourselves, what we don't admit to ourselves is true. And I think Frances does a lot of that, where she is sort of pretending to herself that things are one way when they actually are another.
There's also a murder mystery that you solve as part of the plot of this book.
Yeah, yeah. There's.
Was there a murder in the Galapagos?
There were many murders in the Galapagos. It was, you know, it was a lot of very strong personalities and a lot of lava pits where bodies could disappear conveniently. And a lot of fighting over not a lot of land or not a lot of sort of valuable arable land. So, yes, there were quite a few murders and disappearances, including a flamboyant baroness who has never been found.
You have to wonder what Darwin would have thought about all of that, survival of the fittest on the Galapagos.
Yes, I think it's really interesting that the human history played out almost the same way that his evolutionary theory played out. Yeah, only a few survived.
So how does it work? Did you do a lot of research before you started writing the book, or did the research come as you needed to find out things?
Yeah, I think I did a decent amount of reading about the time period before I wrote the book. And then I wrote the book and left a lot of sort of blank spaces that I was going to fill in later with research. I find otherwise, all of my novels have required a great deal of research, and I find that research is a wonderful method of procrastination. So if I'm not careful, I will just do research and never write a book. So I've been more conscientious this time about really, you know, being able to write the characters and their actions and filling in the details later.
A number of writers have talked to me about the temptation of sticking everything, that every interesting fact you have learned in your research into the book, even if it slows it down.
I call it the Forrest Gump syndrome, where like suddenly your main character is at every single historical event that happens during that time. Yeah, yeah. And it's hard to resist the data dump because you've done so much research and you have so much to say, but really you have to communicate the bare minimum to the writer and really only what's necessary for character development and character movement, and just keep all the data for interviews like this when you can.
were the characters there from the start?
They were, yes, they really were. I was interested in, my grandmother lived in a old folks home very similar to this, and I was very interested in sort of the factions and the cliques that formed between the women and the way in which Rosalie and Frances' friendship is kind of like a marriage. They bicker, but there's a lot of love there.
No, I've mentioned that this is your third novel. Mm-hmm. You have a collection of short stories, but aren't you also the co-author of cracking the SAT literature subject test?
I am. It's one of my magnum opus.
How you make a living while you write novels?
Pretty much everything
literary novels
one can do while writing literary fiction. I have worn a sandwich board. I've worked at a hot dog stand and a crepe cart in a pedestrian mall. And one of the things I used to do is do SAT tutoring. So it very much helped my vocabulary, I think. and I'm really good now at mental arithmetic, so I'm always the one who calculates the bill at a restaurant.
Do people send you thank you notes?
For cracking the SAT too? No.
The question that authors always are uncomfortable with at the end of a conversation of this sort is, are you working on something else right now?
I am working on something else right now. In fact, I handed in this novel on a Monday, and on Tuesday morning I started a new book just to say that I'd done it, and then I didn't do anything with it for a couple months. But it's based very, very loosely on a real-life hate crime that happened in Chicago in 2005.
So while you were working on this book, you obviously were already thinking about what you were going to do next.
Yeah, and certainly when towards the end of a book, you're fixing sentences and stuff. They're not, so there's room in your brain for larger pictures.
A lot of novelists take care of that by writing short stories while they're working on a novel, and you began by publishing short stories. Have you given up the form?
I haven't given up the form, but I have to say that I have a teaching job and. Which is very demanding, and I do manuscript consultations, and there's not a lot of room for creative writing, and so I usually only have room for one big project. But in the future, I would love to get back to writing short stories.
Alison Amend, A-M-E-N-D, her latest novel is Enchanted Islands. It is published in the Nan A. Talese imprint of Doubleday Books, and I thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks. It's been a real pleasure.
Up next, we'll explore the ways that undocumented immigrants are making their voices heard this election season, even though they're ineligible to vote. This is WMIC and WMIC.org. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Our handle is @LeonardLopate.